语课堂听 class.com。
Part 3. Interpreting. Instructions. Listen to the following passages and start interpreting at the end of each segment. Sentence 1.
农业是多哈谈判的核心。发达国家和发展中国家都面临压力，但富国和穷国的压力是不同的。
Sentence 2.
中国是反倾销措施被滥用的最大受害者，支持进一步澄清和改进反倾销等规则方面的现有纪律。
Sentence 3.
When in Beijing, I witnessed the signing of an agreement to commence negotiations for a bilateral free trade agreement between Australia and China.
Sentence 4.
China's own growth, the extraordinary 5x increase in GDP over the last 25 years, dates from the decision taken by the Chinese leadership.In the late 1970s, to embrace more open policies.
Passage 1.
中国商务部部长薄熙来在2005年 WTO 第六届部长级会议上做大会发言。朗读，樊志军。主席女士，很高兴出席此次部长级会议，感谢香港特区政府和 WTO 秘书处为筹办此次会议所做的工作。当年为了实现乌拉圭回合，各个成员费了很大劲儿，但事后的结果并不乐观，世界经济更不平衡，两极分化越加严重。面对这一现象，发展中国家不能容忍，发达国家也感到了危机。正因为如此，大家才把多哈回合定为发展回合。这是 WTO 历史上巨大的进步，也是各个成员富有远见的选择。如果能如此，不论富国还是穷国，都会因为生活在一个更加和谐的世界而获得持久发展的环境。反之，如果发展的主题仅仅是口号，没有实际内容，谈判将失去意义，失去动力，也会令世人对世贸组织感到失望。中国支持多哈回合达成平衡的协议，但所谓平衡不是发达国家各自在谈判中有得有失的自我平衡，而必须是有助于发展中成员的全面平衡。因为事实上，发达国家和发展中国家的总体水平已经很不平衡了。这种失衡已严重影响到世界经济的全面发展。要找回平衡，只有发达国家为本轮谈判做出更多的贡献，为发展中国家提供足够的政策空间。农业是多哈谈判的核心，发达国家和发展中国家都面临压力，但富国和穷国的压力是不同的。在全球26亿农民中，发展中国家有25亿，而且大多数处在贫困状态。即使发展中国家有雄心、有诚意去推进贸易自由化，也不能不顾及几千万甚至几亿农民的基本生计。如果让那些已处于贫困线上的农民遭受更大的冲击，将引发灾难，届时发达国家也不得安宁。因此应立即给予最不发达国家免关税、免配额的待遇，应该给予发展中国家 特殊产品和特殊保障机制的待遇。在推动世界贸易自由化的过程中，关键是要照顾大多数，要让广大发展中成员能跟上前进的步伐。因此要给予所有发展中成员特殊和差别待遇，并力争在香港会议期间就棉花等问题作为阶段性成果达成共识，让发展中成员早期收获，获得看得见摸得着的好处，才能增强多数成员对多哈谈判的信心。中国坚决反对对发展中成员进行分类，像巴西、印度、印尼、埃及、南非、墨西哥、阿根廷和中国这些发展中大国仍然承受着巨大的发展压力，并且照顾着世界上大多数人口。乌拉圭回合已经过去十年，现在是发达国家下决心的时候了。发达国家的农民在全球不到 4%， 而发达国家财力雄厚，完全有能力在取消补贴、降低关税之后，把自家的农民照顾好。我们坚定地支持取消发达国家的各种形式的出口补贴，并定出2010年的时间表以体现诚意，坚定地支持实质性大幅度削减发达成员扭曲贸易的国内支持。在非农谈判中，中国支持双系数瑞士公式，但两个系数之间应有足够的差距，同时应保留为发展中成员所规定的灵活性。为促进发展中成员更多的参与世界服务贸易，在谈判中应在发展中成员关心的部门和出口形式方面给予切实照顾。中国是反倾销措施被滥用的最大受害者，支持进一步澄清和改进反倾销等规则方面的现有纪律，要有效防止滥用反倾销措施，加强透明度，反对某些发达国家新保护主义的倾向。主席女士，我还想再为13亿中国人民说几句话。中国为了加入 WTO 谈判了15年，而且做出了广泛承诺，为多边贸易体制做出了巨大贡献。中国工业品的关税由加入前的 42.9% 降到了今年的 9%， 尤其是农产品关税由 54% 降到了 15.3%， 而目前世界农产品关税的平均水平是 62%。 在 WTO 历史上，从来没有哪一个成员在如此短的时间内做出如此巨大的削减，包括发达成员。中国的服务贸易也开放了100个部门和分部门，以接近发达国家的程度。事实上，中国仍是一个地地道道的发展中国家，有 7.4 亿农民，去年人均 GDP 只有1200美元。过去20多年，中国政府费尽移山心力，使2亿多人口摆脱了贫困，但中国还有近2亿人处于世界银行日均1美元的标准之下，有6000万残疾人需要照顾。因此，在多哈谈判中，中国作为新成员的特殊关注必须得到有效解决。要根据去年7月框架协议的规定，切实给予中国等新成员特殊和差别待遇。尽管如此，作为一个负责任的国家，中国仍将在本轮谈判中努力做出贡献。我要强调，由于中国的实施税率与约束税率相同， 我们所做的任何减让都将是实质性的，是不含任何水分的。中国还有很多很多困难，但它正在为世界做出贡献。2001年，中国进口了2400亿美元，而今年中国将进口6000亿美元的货物，为世界营造了一个新的大市场。我国政府还宣布免除去年年底之前重债穷国的债务。作为中国的商务部长，我深为中国的开放勇气和奉献精神而自豪。我还愿借此机会代表中国政府对沙特阿拉伯和汤加加入世贸组织表示热烈欢迎，并敦促有关成员尽快完成与俄罗斯、越南、白俄罗斯和哈萨克斯坦等国的谈判。他们都在国际经济贸易中发挥着十分重要而积极的作用，他们的加入将进一步增强多边贸易体制的代表性。不久前，中国国家主席胡锦涛发出呼吁，希望有关各方拿出更大的政治诚意，显示必要的灵活性，积极推动多哈发展回合谈判进程，力争在香港会议上取得实质性成果。这就是中国的立场和期待。我多次来香港，但从来没看到这么多部长一块儿来。香港是个山清海碧、干净方便的城市，而且不塞车，饭菜一流，并连续11年被评为全球最自由的经济体。相信大家不会辜负香港给予你们的这些优惠，在此做出有利于人类进步的决断。谢谢主席女士。
Passage 2. Prime Minister of Australia John Howard's speech at Boer Au Forum for Asia Annual Conference 2005. Read by Mitchell Kelly. Chairman Jia Qingling, Your Excellencies, my fellow heads of government, ladies and gentlemen, I am really delighted to be able to participate in this forum. I do so as the leader of a nation whose commitment to and involvement in this part of the world, the affairs, the hopes, the aspirations, and the future of the Asian region is unqualified. Perhaps to illustrate that, I should point out to you that I attend this forum having just completed two very important bilateral visits to China and Japan. When in Beijing, I witnessed the signing of an agreement to commence negotiations for bilateral free trade agreement between Australia and China. When in Tokyo, we reached an understanding for a feasibility study into the possibility of a free trade agreement between Australia and Japan. It also comes, this visit of mine, at the end of a period of very intense exchange and activity between Australia and the member nations of the Asian family. We hosted recently a visit to Australia, the first in 20 years by a Malaysian Prime Minister from the Speaker, the Malaysian Prime Minister who has just so eloquently addressed you. And a few days prior to that, we hosted a visit from President Yudhoyono of Indonesia. I mention these things to emphasize the naturalness of the association and the exchange between Australia and the nations of this region. It is common ground to this conference, ladies and gentlemen, that Asia has experienced extraordinary economic growth over the last decades, particularly over the last 10 years. Australia herself has been a great beneficiary of Asia's economic strength and Asia's economic growth. Japan has been Australia's best customer since 1969, and in the context of the answer given by the Prime Minister of Malaysia to the last question, can I point out that the foundations of that relationship between Australia and Japan were laid as far back as 1957, when a landmark commerce agreement was signed between the governments of Australia and Japan, only 12 years after the end of World War II. And it indicated a far-sightedness on the part of the leadership of those two nations. Bilateral trade between Australia and China has quadrupled over the last 10 years. And a Korean company, POSCO, remains the single best customer for Australian goods and services anywhere in the world. I mention these things to emphasize the benefits that Australia has derived from the growth of the Asian economy. But it's been a complementary process. There has been, as you all know, a huge growth in demand for Australian resources. And that will be the subject of a special session this afternoon. But it has been a two-way process. Imports accounted for 30% of the Australian textile, clothing and footwear market in 1991. By 2001, that had grown to 53%. And can I also point out that Chinese clothing accounts for 73% of all of Australian clothing imports. So it has not been a one-way process, and there has been great complementarity to the exchanges. There is, of course, immense optimism amongst all of us, and no doubt it will pervade this conference, that the momentum of economic growth in the Asian region will continue. And we have good reason to have that optimism. But I think we should also, amidst that optimism, remind ourselves that the experience of the past suggests that it should not be taken for granted, that it has to be nurtured and worked upon in order to be guaranteed. The Asian economic downturn of 1997 and 1998 was abrupt and brutal in its impact, and unfair in many respects in its impact on a number of the nations of the Asian region in particular. But it was, nonetheless, a reminder to all of us of how external shocks of that kind can come along and disrupt the flow and the momentum of seemingly inevitable growth. So, drawing on that past experience, can I suggest to this forum that there are some guiding principles which all of us need to adhere to guarantee a continuation of the economic growth and prosperity that we regard as so important to the future of our peoples. Firstly, I believe that the nations of the region must maintain strong and unwavering commitment to the principles of open trade and investment policies. There is plenty of evidence from the IMF and elsewhere that the most successful nations of the past 30 or 40 years have been those that have pursued open trade and investment policies. Those that have gone most quickly from being underdeveloped to rapidly developing countries have been those that have embraced open trade and investment policies. China's own growth, the extraordinary 5 times increase in GDP over the last 25 years, dates from the decision taken by the Chinese leadership in the late 1970s to embrace more open policies. The same has been the case with India. And the spread of free trade agreements in which Australia has been an active participant is an illustration of the desirability of continuing to embrace open trade and investment policies. Australia herself has signed free trade agreements with Singapore and Thailand. We have commenced negotiations with China and also with Malaysia. All of these measures, of course, are consistent with our World Trade Organization obligations. Provided free trade agreements on a bilateral basis are consistent with the principles of free world trade, there is no inconsistency at all with the goals of the WTO. And on the subject of the WTO, can I emphasize how important the gathering in Hong Kong will be later this year? We have not had a genuine world trade round successfully concluded for a quarter of a century. And the future of the Doha trade round hangs critically in the balance. in the interests of the least developed countries of the world, who depend for 70% of their income from exports from the agricultural sector, significant reductions in high agricultural tariffs, particularly from those areas of the world that maintain them at very high levels, will be necessary if a successful Doha round is to be completed. Secondly, could I argue that there is a constant need for domestic economic reform within the individual member states of the Asian region? This applies just as much to highly developed countries, such as Australia, as it does to less well-developed countries. And the reforms that different governments in Australia have undertaken over the last 20 years stood our country in remarkably good stead when the Asian economic downturn hit in 1997 and enabled us to go through that downturn with little apparent damage. Thirdly, I think we should remind ourselves that despite all the multilateral cooperation that exists, we still live in a world of nation-states. And in times of crisis, and this was no better illustrated at the time of the tragic tsunami a few months ago, it was the capacity of individual nation-states to respond, and Australia included, Singapore and the United States, the three of us rendering particular and immediate assistance to our friends in Indonesia who were so heavily hit. It is the capacity of nation states to act quickly and decisively that is still very important. And this means that individual nation states should constantly look to the transparency of their governance arrangements, that worldwide investment flows will always go to nations which have transparent legal and accounting systems, that have a transparent banking system, and have strong, clear rules of governance that affect the business community. And those rules can only be made and improved and altered and reformed by the actions of individual nation states. Fourthly, we must remind ourselves, for all our natural focus, on the interaction of nations within this region, that Asia should not become in any way inward-looking. That we live in a global economic environment, and that it is our future forever, whether we live in Asia, Europe, or in North America. The United States will remain the most powerful economy in the world indefinitely, and the linkages between this region and the rest of the world are many. Once again, let me illustrate, by reference to my own country, Japan, as I mentioned, is our best customer. The European Union, as an entity, is our largest trading partner. The United States is our largest source of foreign investment. And we have recently signed, and it came into operation at the beginning of this year, a free trade agreement with the United States. Fifthly, let us also remind ourselves that threats of a non-economic kind and events of a non-economic kind can exact a fearful economic price. The tsunami hit hard many of the economies of the Indian Ocean area. The terrorist attacks that took place in Bali in 2002 had a terrible impact on the tourist industry of that lovely island. And the constant threat of terrorism exists as a danger in a very disturbing and disruptive way of the continued economic progress of so many of our member countries. And that, of course, reminds us of the need not only for the maximum cooperation amongst the nations of the region in a friendly, harmonious way, of which the Malaysian Prime Minister spoke so eloquently, but it also means continued cooperation and association with other nations from outside the region in a worldwide fight against the scourge of terrorism. Ladies and gentlemen, this is the first occasion that I've been able to attend this forum. I think the concept of this forum is quite outstanding. It has deservedly grown in prestige and esteem in the few years that it's been in operation. It's a chance for me, at a very wide and prestigious forum, to restate the unending commitment of my country to the prosperity of the region. We are forever together in this part of the world. We will forever need to work with each other, to respect each other, to help each other, to invest in each other's economies, to buy and exchange each other's goods and services. Australia has much to offer the region. The region has much to offer my country. Not least, of course, the resource of its people, and one of the realities and one of the outstanding characteristics of modern Australia is the contribution that people from different parts of our region are making to the shaping of our national life. My friends, I've enjoyed very much the privilege of being part of this forum. I wish it well, and I congratulate those who have conceived the idea of the Boer Isle Forum only 4 or 5 years ago. They truly had the future of the region at heart. Thank you.